Hello and welcome to La Pausa Pod. We've got a special guest interview coming up with Dom from Barca Blog, and we're going to discuss Xavi, the Clásico, and all things pertaining to that in just a few minutes. But firstly, I want to welcome Jamie, as always. He's got a special stats corner for you on this wonderful Wednesday. Jamie, how are you doing? Caught up with some of your favourite teams, I see, over the weekend.
Yeah, picked three standout stats from the weekend from games I watched. It did narrow my pool a little bit, but I think they were all interesting games, to be fair. Las Palmas getting demolished, Girona qualifying for Europe, and Betis landing a signature win before the season's out and looking pretty good again. So, yeah, some interesting storylines.
Yeah, and it looks like Girona certainly against Cadiz, they've kind of course-corrected after a couple of wobbly games, and they're back in pole position to make it into the Champions League. Las Palmas, on the other hand, look like they're starting to struggle and reverting back to the kind of form that we basically expected from them at the start of the season. And then Real Betis still kind of caught in no man's land, if we're honest. The league is not exactly done. Real Madrid are going to win it. Barcelona are probably going to finish second. Girona, and then we've got a big one for fourth. And then down the relegation places, I would say 2.8 of those places are basically certain. And everything else is just kind of has to be decided then. Some European spots and whatnot. It is lining up for a really interesting summer now, because Las Palmas are probably going to get picked apart with some of their better players. Mika Marmol, we mentioned, Sergio Cardona, goalkeeper Alvaro Valles. Girona, we're going to have to wait to see what happens with them over the summer. Yeah, it's just lining up for and then you've got Xavi, also you got Atletico Madrid kind of in a little bit of free fall at the moment. And yeah, we're lining up for a big summer, although with limited financial resources for most of these clubs.
Yeah. So I guess we'll get into the first one, which was from Celta's big win over Las Palmas. I went with an XG stat for this one. I know some people will probably say, why don't you just say they scored four goals? But I wanted to emphasise that Celta Vigo did just create chance after chance, loads of big chances in this match. So their XG from this match was the second highest in a La Liga game this season, excluding penalties. Just under four, which was only behind Girona's 4.7 against Rayo Vallecano back in November. So after watching Rafa Benitez's Celta all season, kind of grinding games down in the business of keeping marginal scorelines, if they had to keep their own door shut at the expense of not really attacking themselves, it was fine. But now Claudio Giraldez, really good start to him for him as a Celta manager. And again, a really good performance as well, looking very dynamic, creating lots of chances. And even Iago Aspas, two goals and two assists in this match. So the formula for staying up is very much there.
Absolutely, yeah. We were talking about doing a podcast on the new manager bounce. There was about a month ago now, Celta got a new manager, Almeria got a new manager, Granada got a new manager, and we were like, let's give it a month, and then we'll return to these three teams and see just what's happening. And it was turned into a bit of a, yeah, that's not going to work, because Almeria are pretty much gone, Granada are pretty much gone, and Celta Vigo are the only ones kind of flying the flag for the new manager bounce. Claudio Giraldez has come in, and we really liked what we saw from him from the get-go with the Sevilla win. They beat Sevilla in his first game. And just in terms of how they played with the bravery and personality on the ball, they went then, drew nil all with Rayo, not great. Lost to Real Betis 2-1. And now they went and absolutely hammered Las Palmas. So, yeah, I think the formula is not only there for avoiding relegation, but the formula looks like it might be there now to build on something going into next season with a personality and some very clear ideas.
Yeah, they've already extended his contract to cover next season, which is a good sign. And I just think the change in style at this stage of the season has been really impressive, to go from Benitez's more reactive, way of playing to Giraldes, who, although they kind of destroyed Las Palmas by recovering the ball high and generating attacks, they've shown that they can take control of games as well. And it's funny to hear some of the Celta players now discussing the transition, because there was a quote from Oscar Minguesa a few weeks ago saying that they'd come from playing such a defensive style of football, and it's something that was not good for them, not good for him personally or the team to be defending so deep. So I think you can kind of tell that they are happier in the system. I think Giraldes has realised that, or he's understood the way that this group of Celtic players need to play, and they look a pretty genuinely good team, I would say.
Yeah, and we've always spoken about the talent. So, well, always. We've spoken about some of the talent that they have in that team. So, again, Rafa Benitez wasn't really backed in the transfer market, and it is a somewhat limited squad, but they do have enough players there to finish higher than what they are now. So let's see. Do you want to move on to the next one then, as you try to fight back the tears?
Yeah, I did manage to not mention Las Palmas there, but yeah, I could probably speak for a good 15 minutes on what's going on there. But yeah, I did do some tweets at the weekend, so I'll leave it there. Yeah, Girona have now scored 42 goals in 16 league games at Montilivi this season, after their 4-1 win over Cadiz. And if we're to exclude Real Madrid and Barcelona, just for, you know why, just because they skew everything, their goals per home game average of 2.6 this season is the highest in a single campaign in La Liga since Athletic Club in 1982-83. They averaged 2.8 and they won the title that season. So again, we spoke about Girona earlier in the season beating up on the lower half teams, basically having no problems at all. A few slippages in the last few months, but overall the record has been tremendous. And I know you said you didn't catch this game, but I'd recommend going back and watching the first 20-25 minutes or so, because it was, as the Spaniards would say, a bath, serious bath, and they played incredible football. It was like going back to November and watching Girona. So great to see that as they qualify for Europe.
And it's really interesting now to see what they do in the summer, because I don't think you can overstate just how important this is. If we look back at what Atletico did when Simeone came in and built on something and have slowly become the third team in Spain, finishing the top four, have changed their entire trajectory. This could be the kind of season, and regardless of overperformance or whatever, this is the kind of season that could propel Girona now into a place, well, firstly, that they've never been before, but secondly, into becoming a team. Okay, even if they don't become like Atletico Madrid, they could become like the new Real Sociedad or the new Real Betis, where they're constantly fighting for Europe. And then, given any given year, they might kind of push up a little bit further into Champions League football. And what they do this summer in terms of players going and players coming in could, because we often see it where a team makes the Champions League or breaks into Europe and the squad just isn't ready or isn't big enough to withstand the pressure of those midweek games. And if they can just do okay in Europe and maintain this form in La Liga, we could be looking at a future defining season here for them.
Yeah, from here it looks like a rock solid project for now. Michel looks really happy in his job. They've got a very clear way of playing. Like you said, once you qualify for Europe for the first time, I always think that following season is going to be so difficult, and we can't really hold them to the same standard. As in, they're not going to be, you know, lights out every week as they were for a lot of this season while playing in Europe. It's just impossible unless you have a super squad. I just think that's so difficult. So hopefully they can hold on to their better players and bring in plenty of reinforcements. And yeah, obviously they're trying to go for Champions League still. They're not happy just to be in Europe. And it seems like they'll get it. So yeah, let's hope the best bits stay together.
Yeah, I was listening to the TIFO football podcast with our buddies over there, John McKenzie and Tom Harris, are speaking about Girona, and they were talking about just their involvement with City Group. And while we have spoken about them not really being capable of spending that much money because of La Liga's financial economic limits, but also just not for whatever reason, not really going big, signing huge big players, they do have like that knowledge sharing and that ability to scout players, ability to get players on loan and things like that, like a Savio and players that we didn't know last season, but obviously City and that the hierarchy at that within City Group knew this guy is good. Dobbik, Tagankov, all these players, there's more than just luck to this. Like, it's not just, oh wow, they found, they know what they're doing. And if they can get maybe even 3 or 4 or 5 players on loan that are on their way to breaking out, that is enough to sustain them next season, and then add maybe 2 or 3 more players signing them, then you're looking at a really solid squad. But yeah, that's we'll see what happens with them in the summer. But do you want to move on to the last one then?
Yeah, so the last one is after Betis's big win at Mestalla, obviously a huge match in the race for European qualification, a 6-pointer as Pellegrini called it. Mestalla as alive as we've seen it in quite a long time. You know, it was very much a cup final atmosphere. But Real Betis became the first side to win at Mestalla in La Liga in just under 7 months. And heading into the weekend, Valencia had only lost 3 of their 23 home games under Ruben Baraja. And they had the best defensive record in that time, conceding only 15 in 23 matches. So just to underline what a big result for Betis it was, but probably even better was the performance after being pretty iffy for the last, I don't know, quite an extended period, probably 3-4 months. This was probably the most convincing they've looked in a long time. And for me, I don't think it's a coincidence that the team that they were able to put on the pitch close to as full strength as I can remember has made a big difference. So especially thinking of that midfield core of Guido Rodriguez, Johnny Cardoso and Isco, that 3, if they could play every week, I'm sure Betis' results would pick up just with that alone. And again, yeah, we've spoken about Isco this season. I would recommend going back and watching his first half. Even injured and only able to play 60 minutes in this game, he was the absolute difference. Totally opened up the game for Betis against the Valencia team, who are difficult to break down.
Yeah, Jamie, thanks to me for Stats Corner. We're going to jump over now to our interview we did with Dom from Barca Blog. Okay, so I'm joined by Dom, who anyone listening to this podcast probably knows who he is. He's over on Twitter. We'll link his Twitter account and his Barca football blog too. And we're going to get stuck into some Barcelona stuff right now because, well, he covers Spanish football and other leagues, of course. He focuses mainly on Barcelona and he really knows his stuff, as you're about to find out. So, Dom, after the Clásico on Sunday, we waited a couple of days to record just to kind of let the dust settle. Presuming the dust has settled, do you want to start with Xavi's overview of the game? He said Barcelona deserved to win and claimed that the game wasn't fair owing to referees' decisions. Do you share his thoughts on that?
It's one of the things about Xavi, really. He says that he wants to protect the players at all times, right? He wants to be the shield that kind of takes all the blame, and he wants to take the attention away from the players sometimes. But I think sometimes what he does is he just goes a bit too far. I think at one point you have to just take a bit more accountability, right, and say, okay, we were not good enough. We were not really on our best. And I think that's what happened. So I don't really share his view. I think Barca should be able to be better and win and play better and not really go into refereeing stuff that much, not really go into this this whole I've lost my train of thought here. we are the victims here. That's the word. So yes, he kind of always does that, which is you know, the fans are kind of fed up with that at this point, I think, as well. The kind of Xavi's mentality that we are always the victims, I think that's sometimes it just gets a bit too much, you know. So I do think that there were some controversial calls that night. I still think that Barca should be able to play and win in spite of that, right? So they should be able to put themselves in the situation where they don't really care about those calls, right? So in a position where you actually can win by your own merit and not depend on these calls going your way, if that makes sense. So I feel like in that way, I mean, I understand what he's doing. He's trying to protect the players. He's trying to give them something. But at the same time, we were not good enough. I think that's the key message here. We were not good enough.
And just to go back over the course of the game, Barcelona had 47% possession in the first half. Frenkie de Jong, of course, gets injured and goes off. It looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season. Pedri comes on, and Gundogan starts to drop back a bit. They control possession in the second half with 58%, but they were leading 2-1 with about 20 minutes to go. Now, Real Madrid were getting tired after their heroics, I'll say, against Man City last week, but at the same time, how did they manage to lose this game?
To be honest with you, I did not hate the approach that Barca had. I think that when they were in possession in the second half, even in the first half, I felt like they were trying to play at their own pace, which is the key against Real Madrid, because we saw against City as well. If you want to play Madrid at their own game, you're probably going to get hurt, right? And especially this Barca, because they're not really built to play at that pace. They're not really built to play this ping-pong football with Real Madrid. So I like the way Xavi kind of set his team up, because when they were in possession, they kind of looked to build from the back. They looked to kind of keep that ball, but also progress the ball, not always just with that. With directness and verticality, they try to do it systematically, right? And going step by step, which is always the preferred option for Barcelona, or should be the preferred option for Barcelona. The problem is they were kind of toothless in attack, and a lot of that comes down to Real Madrid and how they also set up. I mean, even if they were tired, even if with their game against City just you know, a couple of days back, I think Madrid still have the legs, still have. I keep going back to that mentality thing, because Barca just cannot hold on to a lead for their lives, right? So they always struggle with that, and it's a big issue even now under Xavi. Even though I think that Xavi has managed to kind of put this Barca or improve this Barca in terms of mentality and psychological parts of the game, but it's still not there. So I feel like, while the setup was not necessarily as bad as it could have been, it just wasn't enough again.
And we're going to talk about Xavi, his continuity, whether he stays, who's the ideal manager, who they're going to target in the summer. But this current version of Barcelona and how they do set up, you spoke about how you liked how they set up against Real Madrid on Sunday night. What are they lacking at the moment in order to I felt like when I was watching the game, they couldn't get Frenkie de Jong on the ball in the first half, and he was kind of moving around. I don't think he's entirely suited to that pivot position. And then when Pedri came on, he was able to move the defense. He was able to move Real Madrid around a little bit more at the base of midfield, and they were able to get on the ball in central positions a little bit further up the field. Now, he did have Gundogan helping him to shift Real Madrid even further. But what do you think? Let's just assume there's a Frenkie de Jong problem here, or at least we won't blame Frenkie de Jong individually, but there's a defensive midfield problem here. What do you think is the solution? Or maybe you don't think there's a problem. How do you see that position?
There's definitely a profile missing in that midfield, right? There's obviously a six there that's missing, because Barca don't have that kind of a player for a crucial position in the team, and in a crucial position that kind of dictates the way that the whole team plays. But the whole problem Barca have as a squad, it's more of a problem. So people think that Barca don't really have an identity or don't really have a clear style of play. But I think they do have a clear style of play. It's just that it doesn't necessarily suit the profiles they have in the team. So what you have here is Xavi has this clear idea of football, and Xavi knows how the elites play football and how they set up their squads. The issue lies and he wants to... So Xavi as a player, what you first think of when you think of Xavi as a player, you think about tempo and pausa and control. But in reality, Xavi was also very vertical as a player, very direct. So he was all about identifying the space and accessing that space as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And I feel like this Barca is kind of the mirror of that side of Xavi's player profile. And he wants this Barca to do the same thing, identify the space quickly and access the space quickly and efficiently. Now, the issue here is that kind of lends itself to vertical and direct football. But that now there's nothing wrong with that style of play, as long as your profiles and the players in your team kind of align with that style of play, right? But at this Barca, what I feel like is that it doesn't necessarily align with that, right? So you have players like Pedri, players like Gundogan, or players that are very technical, very secure on the ball, very good on the ball. They want to be on the ball as much as possible, but Xavi has a different idea of football. So he is basically, I use this reference a lot in my writing as well, he's basically using a microphone to paint, right? So he's not using his profiles properly, right? So that's kind of the issue I see with Xavi here. So these players, what they are capable of doing much, much more, they're not being used in a way that kind of highlights their strengths. And I think Frenkie de Jong and some other profiles in this team could potentially be used in such a direct and quick way, but even they, I feel like, are kind of underutilized, and that's kind of one major problem the squad has. So I don't think it's the players that don't have the ability or intent to play a certain way. It's that the whole intent of the coach and the whole style and the plan and the strategy is to play in a way that's unfortunately not really aligned with the players that they have in the team. So I feel like all of that is kind of making the problem much, much bigger than it should be, right? So yes, Barca are lacking number six. They're lacking certain profiles to play this football that we are expecting them to play. But at the same time, I still feel is the coaching, is the intent of the coach rather. And that to me is the biggest issue that this Barca has when it comes to this in-possession discrepancy that they show.
Right. So let's, without going through each and every position on the field, and maybe you feel like this position needs a tweak, this area of the field needs different profiles. What are the glaring issues in terms of profile? You said the six there. Is there anyone else that you feel? Because when I watched the Real Madrid game, and with Rafinha and Lamine Yamal on either side, it does feel like they have that option over the top now, and they are more vertical and slightly more dangerous, and they can spread teams out a little bit more. But at the same time, then you're struggling defensively, like we saw, and we'll get on to in a second. But in terms of any glaring holes in the squad at the moment that you can see?
Well, yeah, the number six is the obvious one, because I feel like the midfield, well, it is elite, it's far from complete, because these profiles that they have, they're not necessarily that complementary, right? So they're not that good at plugging each other's weaknesses. So you have three or four players that are good, very good in similar things, right? But they all lack something, and none of them can really jump in and cover for that. So definitely number six, that's kind of more of a, well, I say this, you know, we all say it, the Busquets profile, that's impossible to replicate it, but at the same time, a six that is maybe a bit more athletic, a six that can be a shield, that can be the safer and even sometimes simpler option in possession. But other than that, I would still go for a left winger, because if you have Lamar on the right, that's kind of covered. Rafinha on the left can work, and I think he's a decent option. But at the same time, Barca are lacking what we nowadays call these game breaker profiles, or players who can kind of flip the switch and flip the game on their own, create something out of nothing, and be this consistent high level of threat. And I feel like, as much as Rafinha has been a great worker for the team, he has been a great presence, he does get the job done, I don't feel like he's that kind of a profile for that left side. So Barca need a superstar left winger to kind of plug that hole and take their attack to the next level. We see the links to, I don't know, Leao or Quicha or players like that. And I think that's the sort of profile that Barca should be aiming for. I mean, of course, it all depends on what the next coach wants and what he thinks is the right profile for that position. But I feel like a superstar left winger and a number six are kind of the priorities just now. Defense seems okay, I think, with the young players, and there are some experienced players as well. So I think the defensive line is fine just now. Midfield needs a six, and the attack would need a left winger. Now, of course, depends on what Lewandowski does next season as well. I mean, if he goes, or if he's not as available or as good anymore, Barca might have to think about that as well, but I would prioritize the left winger position and the number six position.
You mentioned there about the defense being okay, and it's we posted a tweet on our Twitter account or X account the other day about Real Madrid's attacks down that right hand side. You're assuming, or obviously, Alejandro Balde is going to come back. Mm. Hector Fort is going to be available. Do you think João Cancelo stays at Barcelona beyond this season?
Cancelo is a very... See, when he first signed, even before he signed, I said that he would be able to maybe raise the bar domestically, but he would not be the type of player that would take Barca that step further in Europe or in these biggest nights, if you will. And I think that kind of proved to be right. So I don't think Cancelo can be an option. Maybe more in a role that's kind of, that just emphasizes or puts his attacking repertoire in the spotlight, but kind of minimizes his flaws, right? And Barca have not been really good at that, because you have to be very good structurally, out of position, very compact out of position, to kind of mask the flaws that these players have in defense. And if the collective is not on point with that, then these flaws kind of come to the spotlight. And that's what happened with Cancelo. So I don't think Cancelo should stay. I don't think he should be the long-term main option that Barca have. Balde, of course, yes. I think his profile, on the other hand, is very much in the mold of this modern elite profiles that you would cherish and you would mold into until they become something, you know, someone who's ready to be this starter, this main cog on that left side. I think Balde has that in him, but yeah, in general, I think the back line is solid with Araujo and Cubarsí and Koundé. I think that is a good base, and then if you have Inigo as well, if you have Christensen as well, I think that kind of gives you something to build on.
And in terms of, oh sorry, just to go back to our previous question, the type of six that you'd like to see Barcelona targeting in the summer, forgetting about financial situation here now and obviously not being too unrealistic, but who is the kind of player that you think could fit into that six and that role that Barcelona are currently missing?
Mm-hmm. It's difficult to say. I mean, I've seen links with the players like Onana, and I think he would fit. People are very skeptical about his technical side, so his on the ball and his press resistance. But I think, while those things are not necessarily his strength, I think he is much better in that than people give him credit. So I think, but he is. Defensive side, his athletic side, his just the legs and his defensive IQ. I think that he fits that profile that Barca would need, next to someone like Pedri, next to someone like Gundogan, next to someone like Frenkie de Jong even. So I think in that regard, he would fit. Of course, finances might not really be in line with that. But I was also very, very high on someone like Moscardo, for example, who is a younger player that was very sought after. So he was very he was, for a while it seemed like all the top clubs would want him, and I was sure that Barca would they would find his profile very, very good, because he kind of fits that mold. He's kind of the mix between technical and physical, and he's very young. He has the potential to be an elite six in the future. And if Barca are playing the long game, which I think they should be, I thought that he would be the ideal target kind of to go for, because he would also be on the cheaper side. But if the finances were okay and they were really going for someone like Onana, I would not be opposed to that.
Yeah, the problem, I guess, with that is that both of those players you mentioned are from Premier League clubs, Everton and Chelsea, and it feels like they... going from the Premier League to the La Liga is a tough task. I said not to worry about finance, but yeah, that's just to throw that in at the end. So it is kind of difficult for them, and that's the challenge, I guess, with Barcelona. And just after the game then, and in recent weeks and months, and I've been thinking about this a lot, and just how it's all kind of played out with Xavi never really crushing the talk of his return. He's always kind of let it build and let it kind of bubble around in the background there. And now that they're basically, they've lost their Liga, basically they're out of the Champions League and the Copa del Rey is over, it feels like it would be a good time for him to absolutely unequivocally say I'm gone or whatever, but he hasn't done that. So do you think that he's lining up a potential rollback on his previous statements that he's leaving?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, in normal circumstances, I would not be opposed to Xavi staying for another season, because I think that was always the plan, right? But Laporta always thought, okay, Xavi's going to stay at least until, I don't know, 2025. And then once he goes, I will find an elite coach. I think that was always the plan. However, with Xavi, you know, going out and saying, okay, I'm leaving at the end of the season, I think he should not really change his mind right now. I think it can only make things worse. That said, I think he loves the club so much, and Laporta is definitely playing on this feeling, because he knows that Xavi won't really leave Barca hanging, right? So if Barca really need him, I think Xavi would be willing to kind of change his mind and maybe stay in the end of the season. So it is a possibility, and seeing all the latest reports, I feel like that is definitely something that Laporta is working on behind the scenes. Well, not behind the scenes, it's very public. It's a public thing. But in my opinion, it should not happen. But at the same time, I can see it happening, because there's no good options out there for Laporta to go for other than Rafa Márquez. And I think if Xavi sees that as a big problem, then he might be willing to actually change his mind and stay for another season.
And you've done a couple of videos over on your YouTube channel looking into the managers. You did one on Flick, you did one on Nagelsmann, and I watched a couple of them, and they're really detailed if anyone wants to go over and give those a look. And regardless now of whether or not they are going to move, who do you think would be the ideal replacement? Forgetting again the finances, because that always has to be mentioned with Barcelona nowadays, but regardless of finances, who do you think would be the ideal manager to come in?
So it's difficult to say. I mean, yes, we're still kind of on this, we're still doing this series of analyzing every single coach that's been kind of linked to Barca and seeing which one fits the best. What I think is there are a couple of things that the next coach has to be able to do, and that's work with very little and still squeeze out a lot out of that, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is the next coach must, the only thing that he kind of has to do is preserve what Barca have so far. So Barca have a lot of talent. They have a lot of these young players. And the next coach must be someone who can kind of cherish that and not destroy it, right? Not destroy what Barca already have. And he has to be able to work with very little, because that's what he will be given most likely, unless things change drastically in the next couple of years, which I don't think they will for Barcelona. If you're looking for a name, specific name, out of these coaches I've analyzed so far, I think De Zerbi is kind of the best option, because he ticks so many boxes, right? From the style of play, from this unrelenting ideology that he has, a conviction that he has, and those principles of play that he employs on the pitch, the way that he works with youth and the way that he works with very little, because he doesn't need a lot of resources, he doesn't need a lot of attention and a lot of financial support to be able to kind of impose his ideas and work on those ideas and coach his team to be able to understand his ideas. So I feel like in that regard, he fits very well. But at the same time, there are coaches like Nagelsmann who are obviously extremely good at what they do. It just, I'm not really sure that Nagelsmann can work with these limited resources that he would have at Barcelona, and with the board at Barcelona kind of being so involved in everything that happens with the squad, I'm not sure Nagelsmann has this holistic point of view, so this holistic approach that he would have to have if he was a Barca coach. So for that reason, I kind of lean towards De Zerbi. I know he's kind of unproven and he's not really worked at these titans of European football just yet. But I feel like whatever he does with his teams, it translates well to what Barca would want to be in the future.
Yeah, I think I've watched De Zerbi a couple of times. That's not to say that I know him inside and out, but I do think what you're saying makes sense in terms of it is a really extreme style. It's very obvious what he's trying to do and what he tries to do in terms of build up. I think it was Pep Guardiola had a quote about him saying he was doing some of the kind of weirdest and most fascinating stuff in terms of build up in European football. Mm. And while I think that would be a good option in the sense with resources, he's proven he's done it at Brighton and he can get results against big teams, but it also could go drastically wrong given the fact that he is unproven.
Yeah.
But do you think the profiles, because in that video you spoke about it was updated and published a couple of weeks or maybe a month ago with the Zerbi, do you think that the profiles fit that team, or is there anyone that would just be like a square peg in a round hole?
It's tough to say. So I think the thing about De Zerbi is that he can work with any kind of profiles because he kind of molds profiles, right? So he will take a player and he will turn him into what he needs him to be, right? So that's one of the things that De Zerbi does really well. And then there are some glaring holes in that team that would need to be plugged. I mean, De Zerbi would absolutely love this team that Barca has. He would even love De Jong because he's never had a player that like De Jong, for example. But the thing that I'm looking at, that left winger position that we talked about, I think that's the glaring issue because the Barca don't really have the type of winger that De Zerbi loves. The only player I kind of highlighted in that video as a potential left winger for De Zerbi was actually Cancelo. So he would be that creative force, that player on the left flank who can replicate what the Zerbi wingers can do. And he's the only one. All the other ones, Ferran Torres, Felix, Vitor Roque even, all of those players would never play out wide for the Zerbi. He would always put them in the middle as the second striker or fourth nine roles rather than someone on the out wide. So I feel like that's the only... If I remember correctly, that was the only position that I highlighted that was problematic for Barcelona under De Zerbi. So he would either keep Cancelo and play him as a left winger, or Barca would have to get a left winger for him. But in terms of the other profiles, I feel like he would make it work, right? He would be able to kind of mold those profiles, make them what he needs to, you know, make them into what he needs them to be. So that's one of the things that I really, really like about De Zerbi. And, you know, Barca always have to be the most technical side on the planet, and De Zerbi kind of does that. He can make a team the most technical side on the planet. So that kind of fits the whole idea of a Barca team.
And another thing about De Zerbi is that you have to be really brave on the ball, and that's something maybe that's kind of lacking from this Barcelona side. Maybe Pedri is a player who absolutely isn't. Gundogan is quite confident on the ball, press resistant. And do you think that is the case? And did you think that was the case with the Real Madrid game at the weekend?
I mean, yeah. Barca do sometimes kind of lack that on the ball proficiency or personality, as you said. So I think with De Zerbi, yes, he would definitely ask them to play in such a way and ask them to be the protagonist, to be the dominating side in any match. And I feel like he would be able to coach them to play that way. So yes, that has been an issue. And I keep going back to that when I said that the Xavi is kind of not using his profiles optimally because he's asking them to do something that they're not exactly comfortable with, or maybe not. They might be comfortable with it, but you're not getting the best out of them by playing in such a way, right? So De Zerbi would never do that. He doesn't pigeonhole players, so he will never ask them to be more than they are. So he will coach them to be what he needs them to be, but it will be within their own, you know, limits or capabilities, if you will. So I feel like De Zerbi does that really well. And I think people kind of underestimate the effect of coherence and just clarity of ideas in a team. And De Zerbi has extremely clear ideas, and he will give you specific tools for you to use to be able to play in that way. And he will tell you what exactly he wants you to do. And I think this Barca team also lacks that clarity of ideas in certain phases of play, where they're not really sure, okay, if I'm right here, where are my teammates and how do we attack in this and that way or this and that situation? De Zerbi kind of gives you that. Xavi doesn't. And I feel like that's been missing for this Barca side. And that's something that De Zerbi could be able to bring to the table that would definitely elevate this team. Because at certain points, you watch this Barca, and it seems like they don't know what the next move should be, right? I mean, they kind of wing it. And even though the build-up phase, for example, is one of the phases that I feel like Xavi has worked on the most, it still doesn't necessarily always have these clear patterns of play or clear mechanisms to kind of progress the play and do so consistently. And I think with De Zerbi or coaches like that would improve.
Yeah, and just before we finish, firstly, I presume Roberto De Zerbi has an agent, a representative, but you could act as his agent if you want, because you've convinced me completely of his ability, and you've talked him up. I'm all in now on him taking over Barcelona, and you've convinced me. So that's the first thing. But secondly, on Xavi. So this is the point where I hear people saying he's got a very clear idea of football and he's got that. But then when I watched him, and it's just what you said there, it feels like it is very ad hoc and it is very off the cuff. And I'm kind of looking going, I get that he has ideas about it, but is it that he can't relay them onto the players, or that he knows how he wants to play, but it's not specific enough to in terms of giving instructions to the players, or where's the cognitive dissonance coming in here?
See, that's the question. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you, but yes, when you look at how Barca set up, I've been doing these coaching analysis, right, on these all these Barca targets or possible Xavi replacements, I could see that all of them, including Xavi, kind of share the same idea. They're all all the elites kind of play in the same way. Well, not completely, but they all share some ideas, right? And Xavi very much understands that. He knows, okay, this is how they generally play. This is how Pep plays. This is how Arteta plays. This is how Nagelsmann plays. But somewhere along the line, something happens, as you say. There's this disconnect between that theory and practice, or whatever happens on the pitch. It doesn't always come up. And the thing about Xavi is he will sometimes set the team up in a certain way, but then if that's plan A and then something goes wrong and something just kind of messes up the whole plan, he doesn't have that in him to kind of make the necessary changes in the heat of the moment, you know, on the spot, in the game, during the game, maybe in the second half, like after the halftime, maybe, yes, he will make changes. But I feel like he's not been able to be the coach that can react on the spot and be this revolutionary type of coach, right? So someone who will bring forth new ideas and improvise in those moments of disparity and struggle. What he does is, and Barca sometimes struggle with this, is that he kind of sets the team up in a way that they look like a tactics board team. That's the way I used to describe them before, because Barca are set up on a team on the pitch in a certain way, and then sometimes or often they don't deviate from that. They're like a tactics board team because they always keep those positions no matter what. But sometimes you need to change things up. You sometimes need you need movement, you need dynamism. And Barca are kind of, they don't know what to do. They just keep to that plan A and they stick to their positions no matter what. They're very rigid, very uncompromising, and that can hurt them in the long run. And I feel like that has been one of the issues with Xavi. And I'm not sure, to be exactly honest with you, because I can't tell you this is why Xavi can't really do these things. But one of the things with these coaches, and Xavi included, if the old problems keep persisting, that tells me that either A, Xavi doesn't really know how to fix them, or B, he doesn't even see them happening, right? So it's either he can't really recognize them at all, or he doesn't know how to fix them. So those are the two options when you have recurring problems from the beginning of the season all the way to the end of the season, or even beyond that. So, and both of those options are kind of bad, right? So I'm not sure which one is worse, but I feel like that has been the issue with Xavi, because these recurring problems from his first season are still kind of here, and that tells me that there's something, you know, something not right in that team, and that has been my main critique of him as a coach, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. There definitely is something kind of missing there, and it is hard to describe. It's hard to figure out, and it's impossible to know, because, or it's impossible at least to assign to one specific thing. But we'll definitely get you back on in the summer if you're up for it, Dom, to discuss this even further and to see what happens with Xavi first, because we're kind of talking here about potential replacements. We don't know if they even need a replacement yet, because Xavi might stay. The financial situation might mean that he has to stay, or that he's convinced to stay. So we'll know more in the summer for sure. We'll know, and we'll see, based on the first couple of weeks and the players that they're linked with, what they're thinking, where they think they need to improve. And it's going to be certainly an interesting summer for Barcelona, and it's definitely going to be an interesting next season for Barcelona. So just want to say thanks for coming on, Dom. Really interesting, and we'd love to have you back on in the summer if you're up for
it. Absolutely. I mean, it's been an honor and pleasure to be here, and keep up the good work.